to say a torso. You know what? A torso. A fucking a torso.
Three, two, one, clap.
Oh shit! I did it early.
No, that's fine. No, that is absolutely
fine.
That's
about fine. As good as it gets.
Oh, that's all right.
That's good. Right. That is good enough.
Oh, it's bang on. Bang on.
Bang on. Fucking bang on.
Our producer is gonna be like, oh, that's kosher, yeah, and your ice cream man gets shit in preschool, isn't it?
Right.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of The Bottlemen. It is Riley and Dan, and today we are very excited to be joined by Brace and Liz from Truanon. Brace and Liz, how's it going?
Oh, what's all this then? What's all this?
I was waiting for that.
Excuse me. I asked for Brace, not Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
What's all this?
You could do a good Boris, like if you got the wig.
Yeah, Boris is easy because he's like, ooh, well, they look like bloody letterboxes, don't they? Like,
yeah, that's right, Cockney that's Boris.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I can't.
The thing is, what we got to do is we got to be ambitious.
Yes, that's pretty good. Yeah,
what
yeah,
we
yeah.
To do is we got to be ambitious. We got to make Trident. We got to put Trident in every preschool.
I'd like to see a video of him eating.
He
sounds like he's talking through a mouthful of food constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, he's always got like a pot pie or something in there. Shepherd pie in the back.
It's a couple bangers, maybe a.
He keeps them in his cheeks for winter, you know? He can always access them at any time.
His cheeks are entirely filled with jelly eels.
My favorite Boris pictures are the ones where he's like desultorily holding like half a warm beer. It looks like he's just one of the men having one of the worst times it's possible to have, just hating where he is, being like, oh yes, it's ruddy good stuff.
Yeah, he's like a human scotch egg.
He's like, I prefer a doner kebab because he's Turkish.
But we might be saying we prefer a doner kebab because despite my longstanding British residency, that is the butt of the joke of this opening segment. We are talking about here the a particularly interesting Canadian, I guess we could say case. One of the cases that has become very prominent in the Canadian media in recent months. And in fact, and that I think is like worthy of attention for a number of reasons because of how, I guess you could say, how protected the subject was, how influential he managed to become despite all of the quite like credible allegations that have been against him for last like 40 years. It is the case of Peter Nygaard, who some have referred to as the Canadian Epstein, a description I don't fully agree with, but it's someone who you guys on Truanon have been following for a little while, right?
Yeah, I think we did an episode on him like right when a lot of the stuff really broke. I had not heard of Peter Nygaard prior to this. I don't know if he was someone whose work you're very familiar with as a Canadian.
No, Nygaard was not on my radar. Probably because I wasn't buying jeggings, but
I was about to say Liz is people don't know this about Liz, but she's one of the premier Liz was a jeggings model for 12 years. She only worked in jeggings, so she was pretty familiar with them. But
I never heard of this guy or the company, like the clothing company, and I didn't know that. Yeah. Like, I mean, I knew what jeggings were, obviously, but I didn't know that anyone was like famous for them because they were kind of everywhere. And I was telling Brace earlier, I was like, man, it's just like these weird, like quasi Euro trash mall companies, you know? Like there's another one called like Desigual, and I have no idea what they sell, but I see the shopping bags and it's like recognizable, but no one's ever been there.
They're like Icelandic direct to video H&M, basically.
Totally. They're like the ABBA of clothing stores.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the thing that struck me about Nygaard is not only the analogs to the Epstein stuff. Like, I got the impression that Canadians were kind of like, you know, we also have our own Jeffrey Epstein. Like, you know, he, he doesn't have his own island, but he lives on an island. You know, he's weird looking and also is obsessed with, like, you know, well, I wouldn't call it genetic modification. I'm not versed enough in the science to know exactly what to call it, but some sort of life extension. And yeah, he was, I will say, Nygaard has almost stranger sexual predilections than Jeffrey Epstein. And, like, really, I mean, you know, reading through the sort of the case documents, just a sick fucking freak. But, like, yeah, I mean, I got obsessed with sort of looking at pictures of him because he is one of the strangest looking individuals that I've ever seen.
It's so, like, unfortunate because I want to, like, spend some time talking about how funny he looks, but then I also am like, this totally detracts from how fucking psycho this dude is.
So,
and I think Grace it's on purpose.
We were talking about this before we were talking about, because, like, as we go through sort of the details of the case, right, like, there are going to be points where he's, like, in a car making some harebrained plans with two henchmen called, like, Tuggy and Bobo, right? That actually does happen. He does make harebrained schemes with these two guys who are his henchmen. And, like, there are points where, as you're reading about it, you're like, this guy is a clown. He is ridiculous. Yeah. He's like a cartoon supervillain. And then, as you're sort of doing that, your mind drifts back to, like, what he actually has done. And it's hard to, it's hard to hold that tension in your head between this person is ridiculous and this person is genuinely a fucking monster.
Yeah, totally.
And so, like, I think what I think I'll do just now, right, is I've got some of the details of, like, the actual sort of charges. There's a lawsuit. There are criminal charges now. Go through some of those details and then generally go through sort of his history, how he got to be where he was, how he became so influential, because he was very influential beyond just mall fashion, which is sort of where he was big. But he was. He had a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, a lot of unexpected places. So Peter Nygaard, as we mentioned, is a Canadian billionaire who's got super, super rich off of fashion that doesn't really happen in its own stores, like stuff you'd buy at Sears, right? Like sensible polyester pants that you'd buy at Sears for women. He spent his entire career cultivating this sort of playboy image. That's right. this completely unsensible, bonkers polyester pants. And he spent his years cultivating a sort of a playboy image. And again, this is, by the way, where I think some of the comparisons to the Canadian Epstein sort of fall flat.
Yeah.
Because Epstein was like, no, he wanted to be taken seriously.
Yes,
he wanted to be taken seriously by world leaders, and he wanted to be seen as a real scientific thinker, and he was a secretive investor who had the genius of Wall Street, and he was able to run a hedge fund all by himself, all sorts of impossible shit, whereas Nygaard goes out of the way to make himself look ridiculous, and this, like, playboy character.
It's actually kind of like Boris in a way, like the clownishness is, like, something that distracts, or, like, kind of, you know, it's like a magician's trick. Like, look over here. Look at my crazy outfits until you don't look at all all the allegations of rape and abuse and torture.
Yeah.
It distracts from, like, the rot underneath, you know, the pure
absolutely.
Evil.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So what happened was, is that in June 2020, 57 women filed a class action lawsuit against him in New York, claiming that as far back as 1977, he had been sexually assaulting them. And also, again, this is where it diverges from Epstein as well, that the Nygaard company, so the company that was making these pants, was also deeply involved. So that he had his actual employees who worked in corporate communications doing double duty, both writing, you know, emails about pants, and also basically helping him commit his crimes, allegedly. So the complaint in the class action suit says the rape, sexual assault, sexual battery, molestation, and sex trafficking of many of Nygaard's victims occurred on company property and was facilitated and enabled by, among others, employees in the Nygaard companies. So this was, it was, like, it wasn't as though he was doing this and he had help from outside. It's that he sort of built an empire, allegedly, on doing exactly this, right? Like, this was his business in addition to the pants.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of strikes me about this, and same with the Epstein stuff, although this, like, with Epstein, it's, like, unclear how much work he was doing every day. Like, you know, he didn't really have an office. He didn't, like, go to work. But Nygaard, you know, actually had companies, but he seems to have spent, like, an incredible amount of time just engaged in, I mean, whatever you want to call this, like, human trafficking or, like, you know, assaulting young girls. But, like, it's, like, what astounds me about all these things is, like, what are these... I guess I just, like, I'm old now. Like, I just, this is, like, my retirement. Like, I'm still got one foot in the company, and but I basically use it to, like, facilitate my pamper parties.
Mm. Yeah, and we will get into those. So that is the civil lawsuit.
Yeah.
Now, there were criminal charges that were leveled in December of 2020, which basically say that since 95, so... low a sort of shorter range of cases, Nygaard used his influence in businesses to recruit and maintain victims in the U.S., Canada, and Bahamas, often from disadvantaged backgrounds, to sexually gratify himself and his associates. And in this case, his associates were frequently Bahamanian politicians,
yep,
and business partners, and who we will get to. So the Nygaard's victims would have their passports taken from them when they were flown to the Bahamas, the lawsuit that charges allege, suggesting that basically the designer would want to perform a sex act on them before releasing them from his estate. And again, as I was talking earlier, right, where I get that tension, that finding him a clown momentarily and then remembering him as a monster, this is the scene that I remember when I think, I have a difficulty laughing at him. So I'll read this out. And this is from Michelle Cronin's book, Predator King, Peter Nygaard's Dark Life of Rape, Drugs, and Blackmail. It's an interview with Rachette Ross, who was one of his employees at his estate. I can remember a Bahamanian girl going up to Nygaard's room. She didn't want to have sex with him, and she managed to get out. She was naked, and she ran straight to the gate, and she tried to climb. And his bodyguard came, and he dragged her down the fence and carried her back.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like his compound was basically like it was a way to keep girls in too. Because that's like if you read through the court documents, I mean, it's girls being like, I didn't want to, but they was like, I couldn't leave. And that's something Epstein did too. Is he would take girls' passports.
Yeah, Nygaard was big into locking people's passports in safes.
And if they're from the Bahamas, a relatively, you know, conservative culture, basically being like, well, you're blackmailed now, essentially. Like, this was, and again, to read about, like, his, what he had at his house, his human aquariums, what he made some of these girls do, this is and I feel like it's important to, like, emphasize this up front, which is that this is just a fundamentally sadistic and evil man.
Yeah, he's like a total psychopath.
Yep.
Yeah,
like he's like, or sociopath, whatever. But like, I mean, clinically, like this, he's like a sick and evil person on a level that I don't know. It's, I mean, maybe that we've been in the Epstein stuff so deep for too long, but I don't even know how to compare this to Epstein even. because Epstein's, I mean, you know, a lot of the like kind of political and intelligence connections were so much broader or seemed to have like other ends as opposed to just only enriching himself and his own kind of personal sexual predilections or whatever, and violent and, you know, whatever, you know, when we get into the details of Nygaard. So it's like, and this sounds so insane, but it's like comparing him to Epstein seems like not doing Nygaard's crimes justice, which is
exactly.
Crazy.
I totally agree. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just as an aside, like in getting ready for this episode, Riley and I were going through Nygaard's blog, which has been scrubbed, but it's on the Wayback Machine.
These guys always have blogs.
And sicko bloggers. Yeah. Tale as old as time.
He had like multiple blogs, right? So he had a corporate blog, a personal blog, and then the Nygaard biotech blog, all independent of each other. And his personal blog So you're reading about the crimes that he's doing, and then you read his blog, and he'll write like a 500-word post about how it'll be like, Peter Nygaard sacrificed the most incredible thing for the good of his parents. Peter Nygaard's sister owes everything she has to Nygaard's big heart. And it's clear, like, he is the person writing this, referring to himself in the third person, talking about how he's, like, the most benevolent angel on earth, you know? It's pure psycho shit, is what I'm getting at. And I'm surprised, he seems outwardly a lot less functional than Epstein. Like, Epstein could swim in the waters of normal humanity, whereas Nygaard had ascended to a level of, I think, like, cruelty and self-aggrandizing psychosis, where you see him in a room with anyone else, and you're like, this person is a fucking freak.
He, like, literally looks like the final tier of the galaxy brain. He is, like, galaxy brain pedophile.
He's
exploding galaxy brain pedophile.
He reminds me of, like, not even a Bond villain, but like an Austin Powers villain.
I was trying to think of how to, like, physically describe him, and I was like, it's like if Mickey Rourke was playing Richard Branson, but in the Austin Powers universe.
Yes, he
even has the undefinable accent, right? Because he's Finnish. He's a Finnish Canadian.
Oh, it's so sick.
I don't know if you saw, I sent a Google Doc with some of these notes last night. On top of it, I was a picture from Peter Nygaard's blog that I couldn't help but clip, which is him having photoshopped his head onto the body of, like, the male hero of a romance novel.
That's so funny.
And it's very obviously a Photoshop.
Well, that's the thing, is he looks like, I mean... Due to his advanced age, he can't look too much like one, but he is obviously going for, like, the, like, you know, the knight and the maiden kind of, like, romance novel thing, because he's got these. I mean, he looks like Fabio, but, like, if he was, like, maybe forced to wander the desert for, like, 80 years and, like, has desiccated, and, like, he's like a raisin type Fabio.
Yeah. Fabio who went to a double Moses situation.
Like homeless tan Fabio, exactly. But then hit by lightning, so he's got white hair.
Because he has a mane. I mean, you can't deny that, you know, for all the horror and terror that this man has caused. Like, he has a mane.
Speaking of some of the horror and terror, just for context, remember this date. Is that his first credible public allegation and arrest for sexual assault occurred over 4 decades ago in 1980, right? Where he's accused by a woman in Winnipeg. The case is stayed because she refuses to testify, and a later lawsuit suggests that she was paid hush money by the company.
Yeah.
So remember that day, 1980. Just keep it in the back of your head. So before we get into his history, let's ask, where are we now? He's been denied bail. He's in jail in Manitoba. He's been charged criminally, and he's awaiting extradition to the U.S. A doctor giving an affidavit of his condition said, I observed a marked decline and deterioration of his physical appearance. He has aged dramatically.
So he doesn't have that sweet juice anymore.
I know, yeah. I've got some things to say about that.
He needs a little bit of that sweet Nygaard biotech. So, and the doctor then says that Nygaard isn't getting proper nutrition well in jail because of a sugar allergy.
Uh-huh.
Of course.
He has... and is provided evidence that he is allergic to approximately 70% of the food served in the Headingley Correctional Center because it contains white carbs.
So just basically the most irritating person to be in a van tour with.
Liz and I were talking earlier about why Nygaard might have aged so precipitously. In his stay in jail.
Could it be because the prison stem cells aren't as good?
I actually think that, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like, you know, obviously the guy was invested, I mean that in more ways than one, in stem cells. And maybe, you know, his supply gets cut off. The guy just starts fucking melt. I mean, he's 79 years old. That's old, you know?
He's very old.
That's very old. And so he, are there photos of him since he's been in prison?
There's drawings.
Drawings, yeah.
Yeah, it's paintings.
Interesting. If he was into extension, I mean, I know we'll get into this, so I feel bad because we're like kind of jumping ahead. But
go for it.
With his interest in stem cells, like, I mean, from my understanding about longevity stuff, like, he would have been doing like crazy hormone creams, crazy like supplement stuff, like crazy infusions as well. Like, not, and most likely, I mean, probably the Peter Thiel blood stuff, although I'm pretty sure that like the science doesn't really back that stuff up, even though people like the crazy, disgusting vampire idea. But so he, like, if he doesn't have access to all that shit, like, it's, like, gonna fall real quick.
Yeah. You're saying, like, he doesn't have access to his big bucket of retinol cream, basically.
Like, basically, yeah, but it's, like, human retinol cream. What's so funny, though, is, like, this is what, I mean, this is what we were just talking about this, and it's, like, in this weird way, then, like, the adrenochrome story is kind of true. Like, it isn't adrenochrome, but, like, these guys and this guy is literally, and, you know, I know we'll get into this, like, one of his big fucking pursuits is stem cell harvesting in order to fuel life extension and longevity studies, or at least in his, for himself. And that's like not, I mean,
it's not that far off.
Yeah. And it's like this, it is this crazy sort of, I mean, I don't know. It's like, this shit is so twisted, man. It's so fucking twisted.
Oh, no. So, well, I mean, I saw that. I sent you guys earlier that story that, you know, he was reported that he had asked girls to get abortions from his sperm and then use the stem cells from that to, like, they could live forever. And, like, you know, it's not the most sourced story in the world, but, like, it's imminently believable. And that's literally, basically the adrenochrome story, which is, like, harvesting... you know, the fountain, like, of youth from a dead baby or whatever.
He built a jeggings empire in order to lure young girls in who he could rape, to then impregnate, to then force to get an abortion so he could harvest the stem cells so he could live forever. That's insane. Fucking insane.
It's insane. Fucking insane.
Well, it's why, like, a lot, it's why I always get very annoyed anytime I see, like, journalists be like, oh, you need to debunk conspiracy theories or whatever. And it's like, no, conspiracy theories are like people kind of working out maybe in many very metaphorical or sort of narrative driven ways. Like, no, what's kind of actually going on here? Like, these attempts to, like, cheat death, this sort of predatory nature of the of like the billionaires or whatever, like, no, like, that's actually happening. It's just, it's happening in this much more, like, sort of mundanely evil way.
Yeah, it's a lot of conspiracy theory, I think, are people sort of attracted to a central magnetic lode of truth and then getting and then taking a left turn because of ideology or because they maybe the truth is slightly more boring than they would like, you know?
Yeah. This is just such a, the comparison of like his obsession and also, you know, Epstein's obsession with like youth and living forever, though it was like executed differently with both of them. And like the centrality of their predation to like furthering that obsession and so on. Like, it's, you kind of see the core of that, but, so shall we talk a little bit about his personal history and some of sort of what, how he ended up where he was?
Yeah, let's see what made the man.
So, Peter Nygaard was born Pekka Juhani Nygaard in Finland in 1941. His family moves to Canada at very early age, and he's raised in Winnipeg, claiming to have grown up in a small converted coal bin with no running water or electricity.
Wrong. He lied. Made that up. Not true.
Yeah, absolutely. Complete bullshit. Something he made up once. He was like, it's kind of like Steve Renazzisi once made up like being in 9/11 to seem more interesting. He just like made it up once and was stuck with the lie.
Dude, there was a chick who said that she survived 9/11. That was like one of like, she like made it through all these like 9/11.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Memorial things and stuff. Yeah, she was cool.
I've heard three podcasts about Nygaard, and they repeat that story as if it's true. Mm-hmm. So they're not doing their homework.
Yeah, that's an obvious. I mean, if you read any billionaire founder story, they're always try to like obscure how good they had it while starting out.
Yeah.
Always, every single time. And the 15 by 13 foot converted coal bin with no running water or electricity, that is someone telling that story who is a moron.
Yeah.
Like it's the same tone as him being like, well, my like all of my evil deeds have basically come to light. I'm being sued. I'm being criminally indicted. Time to write a post about how nice I am to my mother. Right. Like that's
to
not
myself.
Yeah, that's not competent. Right. Like management of yourself in the face of those things. Right. It's ludicrous. It's not even like it is someone sort of panicking. And this seems to me to be like kind of the same thing where it's like, yeah, this is just not even believable.
Also, you know, I know what you guys are thinking. Okay, here's a guy who moved to Canada in the mid-1950s, and he used to live in a Nazi-occupied country. You know, maybe there's some political sympathy going on there. So I dug into that a little bit, and the only thing I could find was Nygaard and his mother went back to Finland in 1994 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Finland winning the Winter War. So...
Yeah. Wonder what salutes cool. might they have given.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Just wow. a little, maybe just a little wave like
they
that.
They waited so long. The only time they could find to go back.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's safe now.
They were called back.
Yeah. Well, the Finnish did not win the Siege of Leningrad, so I will say
that. That's true. They got rinsed.
They may be a little better on defense than they were on offense.
Yeah.
So... from what I assume was a relatively normal suburban home in Winnipeg, he then ends up in the clothing business, working for the department store Eaton's, being sort of getting into a management track position, but then ending up investing his life savings in a failing tailoring, like women's tailoring brand, turning it around and turning it into a Canadian household name. Not really interested in sort of that process. It's just a regular business story as far as I can see. There's no, Donald Barr coming in and being like, you're gonna be the king
of
pants.
King of polyester. Right?
Listen, have you ever heard of pedophilia? I got this great thing all lined up for you.
So in the 1970s, he expands his business into the States and basically gains like prominence for being an extreme early adopter of computers to like track his stock and inventory and all this stuff. Not interesting. Here's what is interesting. This is, again, from an archived version of his website that has been taken down. 1982. So remember earlier I said, remember that date, 1980.
Mm-hmm.
That is when he is first credibly accused of sexual assault. 1982. This is a quote from his timeline on his webpage. Quote, "You don't know how far you can go until you push the limits," unquote. This is the year that Nygaard plants the seeds of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Yeah, he's
come on, man.
You know what?
Come on, Jack.
You know what? Let's go with it. I'm gonna just start saying that from now on. Hey, did you know Peter Nygaard? He came up with the idea for NAFTA.
Yeah, that's what the N stands for. Nygaard's American Free Trade Agreement.
Yes, exactly.
That's why you didn't see Jaggins anywhere, and then they were everywhere. It's Nygaard, baby.
Nygaard.
That's all that globalization has brought to this country.
Yeah,
it's just
right.
Jeggings.
Speak on it.
And a northern fake version of Fabio who likes to get, I mean, you said Eaton earlier. My man likes to be eating some shit.
That's right, he does.
humans.
That's why all of those, that's why all of these sort of out of work auto workers in like, you know, Lordstown, Ohio, yeah. were all wearing jeggings.
The exactly. Finnish word for corpophilia is exactly the same as the English one. It just has extra eyes in it.
Nygaard said Salo was like, you know what? What if I actually ate the shit too?
Yeah, well,
I
you're think not supposed to imitate Salo. The protagonist.
Yes.
So the initiation of NAFTA began in 82 when Nygaard writes a strategic position paper, which results in his appointment to the chair of the advisory committee on Canadian long-term industrial strategy. From there grows Nygaard's recommendation to grow a free trade agreement with the U.S., which ultimately becomes the foundation for Mexico's entry in 92, known as NAFTA. Now, I was wildly skeptical. What?
As was I when Riley told me about this.
I was wildly skeptical of this, not for the least of the fact that he's already, like, this is 2 years after he's already been, like credibly accused as a rapist. And then I cross-checked an issue of McLean's from 1986, which corroborates what he said.
Jesus.
Well, wait a second. First of all, okay, maybe he was involved, which is very weird, but...
Yeah.
I want to point out that now so the Canadians are now taking credit for NAFTA. Can we just like give it to them? Can we say like, I'm surprised that now like U.S. politicians, like they should just be like, what? Actually, NAFTA was Canada's fault. This crazy guy did it. Like it wasn't us.
That's the perfect
out. I should say it corroborates. I should be clear. It corroborates elements of what he said.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
No. You know what? I don't even want to know. I think we should just move on.
It sounds right to me. It sounds correct.
So, what the article says is, and this was an article again in support
it's
of
NAFTA.
It's
like, I felt a real kinship with this guy, William Jefferson Clinton, who at that time was...
We like the same thing.
I would invite him to my... Yes, I would invite him to my island, and then he would say, no, I'm not coming to that broke-ass island. every manufacturer manufacturing sector is demanding to be heard, but few are as vulnerable as Canada's ailing textile and apparel industries. It is doubly significant, therefore, that the man chosen by International Trade Minister James Kelleher to represent the industry on the committee is flamboyant and highly unorthodox women's clothing manufacturer Peter Nygaard.
Highly unorthodox.
In 84.
Oh, yeah.
The Canadian government appointed Nygaard as the co-chairman of a 15-member task force to make recommendations to the federal government concerning long-term industrial strategy. Nygaard's personal views are important to the committee because, unlike most Canadian clothing manufacturers, he has not only tried to invade the American market, but has achieved considerable success doing so. If free trade between Canada and the U.S. has any chance of succeeding, it will take businessmen of Nygaard's flair and persuasive powers to make it fly. He is the prototype of the kind of internationally minded man of business who views the U.S. market, and get ready for this end of this sentence, not as a frightening black hole, but an opportunity to be enjoyed and conquered.
And this
is like an incredibly sexual language for like a press release.
Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck?
No, it was a press release.
Did he write that?
It seems
written by a journourist in one of the Canadian version of The Economist.
Lord. Okay, well, I don't know what's
Canadian
going on up
there. Newsweek maybe. Mm-hmm. Was written about him.
Riley, are you Canadian?
Yeah. I am.
Yeah, we both are.
What do you think? What do you guys? I mean, I know Dan is. I don't have to ask. He's got a Canadian physiognomy or whatever. How you pronounce it.
Yeah, ectomorph, baby.
Yeah. But is this guy like? Is this like? Do you feel proud right now? Like, are you guys like? This is my country.
I mean, this is classic Canada though, which is we are obsessed. We're so obsessed with other countries that 50% of this podcast lives in one.
Yeah. Yes, fair enough. Well, no, 100%. I mean, Montreal?
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're...
Pure FLQ over here.
Yeah. We're...
Recognize the federal state.
Canada very rarely recognizes this about itself openly, but we will do anything and do it for anyone who is famous in America.
Yes.
Like, there is this, I think this is, and that's why like I wanted to bring this up, right? Because it was like, oh, all this stuff he's done, but he's famous in America. He's succeeded in America. We kind of have to, you know,
that makes me
sad. We kind of have to let that slide. Yeah.
I mean, because what? Because they sell his jeggings in Costco?
Basically.
Yeah. It's incredibly depressing.
I mean, you could,
you need a Canadian nationalist movement.
Oh, yeah.
That's not Ukrainian.
Okay. No,
I mean.
It is. It is a thing. I mean, we do have our Nazi diasporas or whatever, but we also have the conservative movement. And
what? Even the names sound like that?
But I'm just going to say, like, you know, as a nationalist movement, it fails on the fundamental level because it takes all of its cues from American nationalists. Right up to and including, like a rebel flag with maple leaves instead of stars on it, you know?
No.
That's the level.
No.
Are they like...
Yes.
Are they like pro-queen?
No, they're pro-Trump.
They're pro-Trump.
They don't even care. Yeah, they need to get like real... Yeah, they need to go deep back in the well, you know?
Yeah, no, they're all... They don't like the royal family because it's woke now, so they just like Trump. So a Canadian nationalist just wants to be an American state.
The
thing is, right, this is something we come back to over and over and over again on this podcast in every different form, whether it's music or like TV or politics or even fucking newspaper headline writing, right? Like the way to be taken seriously in Canada is to show that America's taking you seriously. And so our moral compass, again, on all, whether it's our aesthetic compass when it's to do with culture or our moral compass when it's to do with politics or this fucking guy, it's so warped by just the presence of America and our need to be taken seriously by it.
And previously, before that, it was warped by our position as like a British colony. So
yeah, totally.
You know, we covered this on the podcast, but like one of the first all-out Canadian media operations was to convince Canadians to go fight in the Boer War, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like we're
well, you guys gave us Vice.
You're welcome.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. You can check that out on our previous week's episode with Felix Peterman.
You know what though? I will say that like that Europe more and more. I mean, I know the relationship is obviously very different, but I will say that like I've been pretty over the past like 2 years. It's increasingly evident how strong American cultural power is still, and like it's. Like the its influence in Europe even is like almost shocking.
Yeah, there were like BLM protests in like the Netherlands.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, wait a second, you guys have your own histories with a lot of shit. Like, it's very weird to see like American, I mean, especially like American racial politics, like kind of like slapped onto European like colonial nations. It's like very weird.
What's up? But so and I think one of the important, of course, like one of the important things, right, is not to be like, oh, without America, Canada wouldn't have produced Nygaard and wouldn't have put him in a position of power, blah, blah. It's not to say that. It's more say, right, like, yeah, it's more to say, right, that it was because of that. It was like, well, everything else can be overlooked.
Right, yeah. Right. And even highlighted in the language, it feels like.
God damn,
feels very
right?
Like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I don't like that at all.
I don't care for that at
all. He put his hands all over America's soft, soft interior. And he just squirted jeggings all over the, you know, it's like his hot breath into the Mexican foreign minister's face.
But that's not the last time he was appointed by Canada to take on an international business leadership role. 1989, Peter becomes the founding member of the Canada-USSR Business Council.
I mean...
89?
Yep.
89.
Is that a front?
Not a long-lived council.
That's got to be a front. I mean, he's probably like shoveling jeggings in there, being like, all right, we got to like, you know.
He's like, if blue jeans are bringing down the Berlin Wall, think of what jeggings will
yeah,
do.
Totally.
Yeah. I looked into that council, and as far as I can tell, the only thing it accomplished was it brought a bunch of bizarre Mennonite groups to the USSR, and it made a guy named Lou, or Lubcho Navkosky, incredibly rich, because he would go on to own the second biggest gold mine in Russia. So that was the sum total product of that. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly what Nygaard got out of it, but the fact that he was even on that is fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's like the, okay, well, who's our one guy that's taken seriously in the U.S. that's like, you know, not one of the who's line guys? It's Peter Nygaard. Let's get him in there.
I will say Nygaard does look like a Soviet rock musician from the 80s.
That's a really good point. He looks like a member of Kino.
Yeah.
Or East German. He could do like a B-list metal drummer.
But you know he would have been like somehow funded by the CIA or something. Like he doesn't look like he's...
Oh, yeah.
Not trustworthy.
Oh yeah, we hung out with this dissident East German metal group from Vice 1989.
Was ready to smash capitalism.
Yeah.
So, in 2011, he begins stem cell research. he's the first man to do it.
Fast forward.
Nothing happened in the intervening 20, no, in the intervening 20 years. It's like Nygaard opens first computerized store. It's like, yeah, cool. All right. I did do some judicious editing. I've been like, Nygaard opens first store in Grand Rapids. 2011 stem cell research begins, prompted by a desire to regain the fitness of his athletic youth. He definitely wrote this. He definitely wrote all of these entries. He did not get anyone. He had his corporate communications team did not write this. Prompted by a desire to regain the fitness of his athletic youth and be proactive about his health rather than reactive, he began researching. See, that's not writerly, to be proactive about his health rather than reactive. You wouldn't hire someone to write that for you. He began researching stem cells and realized the potential for developing anti-aging treatments. This is a quote from elsewhere. He claimed, "The University of Miami is looking at me, and my markers have shown exactly that I have begun reversing my age and getting younger." So,
yes.
His quest to...
Yeah. So, by my metrics, I'm actually 14 years old, and this is totally legal. This is... People haven't taken... The courts haven't caught up to the science yet.
Your Honor, let the record show that I have been injecting my own cells back into my own body.
Yeah. So he says, I have been getting younger. And that's another thing that I think sort of distinguishes him from like Epstein and even like a lot of the other billionaires who are seeking to like prolong their lives. He's not on a quest to find the fountain of youth. He believes he's found it. He's like,
and it's him.
Succeeded.
And it is him. It's coming from within him.
Yeah.
He is the alpha and omega.
Yeah.
He's removing the rib of death and self-sucking unto his youth. Like
his own fountain of youth, as it were.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Benjamin Button, the Ubermensch.
Yes.
Benjamin Button, the Ubermensch, commemorating victory in the Winter War. So we will talk at length later about the stem cell thing, because it gets incredibly sordid how that ends up getting carried on. 2013, and this is just, I wanted to point out that in addition to all of being like a basically inhuman monster, he's also an annoying guy. 2013, Healthy Living Agenda begins. Nygaard promotes healthy living at all of his offices. State-of-the-art gyms are installed, and only healthy food is introduced on the menus at the Nygaard cafes.
This is like when I worked at the brewery, they would fucking be like, hey, we got health scorecards, and if you eat enough bananas we leave in the break room, you get like a $20 gift certificate to Whole Foods. But like, the management was eating like, you know, nachos and shit every night. They'd have like catered meals all the time, and they would leave their leftovers. And so like half the time there'd be like four bananas and then a tray full of fries from like 18 hours before that have been left out all night for us to eat, like cold.
Choose wisely.
And,
yeah. It feels like it's like there's like a camera and they're like, what are you going to do?
But I remember they'd have our HR
certificate.
They'd have the HR lady who everyone hated and who I think single-handedly made quit the company. She would be sitting at a table and you'd have to go and get your banana from her, and then you check your name off of things. And I saw one time, because we were all like, oh, this sucks.
Did you
like,
work
this,
at the orphanage from Matilda?
Did you work at a collective farm in Belarus?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I would go and like, you know, you can only take like two things, and they'd be like, you can have like a Cliff Bar, but the Cliff Bars were a size of Cliff Bar that I'd never seen before. Where it was one bite of Cliff Bar. in a full size Clif Bar package.
The bait and switch flavor.
So everybody's like, oh, sick.
They
want
you to be a little
sick.
Piglet.
Like,
yeah.
Those are the diet ones, so they come just half size.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because those are basically candy bars. And it, she would be like, I remember I tried to take two oranges and I got in trouble.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I was, to be fair, I was going to put them under my shirt and pretend to have breasts.
Well, it's a good, it's a good thing the HR lady was already there. She could have just written you
I
up
was
right
like,
away.
Look, I got a mastectomy. Sure. I only got one titty.
They
should have let me have two.
So. That's right.
I did do that.
Okay. In 2013.
You're in the union. They can't fire you,
right?
That's right. You can do whatever you want.
In 2013, Nygaard is honored with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal. 2013,
oof,
after just basically everything kind of just like being an open secret about him. 2013, awarded with the Queen's Diamond
Jubilee.
That's
why he got the medal.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. It's the British royal family, of course.
They're like, for services rendered to the crown against 14-year-olds, you shall be awarded the highest honor of the land.
So, former Lieutenant Governor Pearl McGonigal and Senator Rod Zimmer present Nygaard with the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal in recognition for his work raising money and awareness. So we were still raising awareness back then for local cancer charities. And his
people still be raising awareness.
You know what? We've raised too much awareness.
Yeah.
I'm too aware now.
No,
I know
everyone
about every
is way too aware.
Piece of annoying bullshit that's happening everywhere.
We need
like,
to tamp down awareness.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
No more.
Like, I shouldn't know about 95% of the things I know about.
No. Nope.
Mixon?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
What's up with that?
Let us discuss his house. So, in 87, he bought an estate in an enclave of a part of the Bahamas called Lyford Cay. And Lyford Cay was extremely like waspy and buttoned down. Lots of sort of old money hedge fund managers, one of whom will come up later. And he built this sort of dream home, which was a 150,000 square foot resort built to be like a Mayan temple with cabanas, smoking fake volcanoes, helipads, discos,
cool,
a casino, a human aquarium, which is a deeply fucked up concept, with sharks on one side of the glass.
How can you have a casino at your own house? It's like, oh, own money.
Well, the house always wins.
And then they're like,
the other people. It's the only way to beat the house.
Yeah, gotta be the house. Gotta be the big Mayan stupid house.
To beat the house, you must be the house.
Yeah.
That's like, you know how Barbara Streisand has a mall in her basement?
Does she?
Really? Yeah, it's like really fucking weird. And it's like little like, oh, my little antique shoppy. And she like goes down there and picks out presents. Like, I know this isn't true, but all I could imagine when that came out was like people working down there being like, wonder if she's going to come down today.
Wait, she does.
Dude, it's in Vanity Fair. There was a whole thing. She has like an old timey shopping center in her basement. Mm-hmm. It's fucking sick.
Does she have to buy the stuff and then put it in her shopping center so she can decide
know.
If she wants to
What
buy-
if she's like, oh my God, I forgot my wallet? And they're like, it's okay,
does she have
Babs,
like,
you can take it. You own it.
Yeah, B's doll shop? Does she have like, yeah, they have like wrapping paper and like, maybe it's like a vendor that's down there. It's like, oh, well, you know, I just work out of Barbara's house. Yeah,
someone realized a really profitable place to put a franchise.
Totally.
Yeah.
They're like, this lady buys everything.
Well, I have to put a guitar store in my basement, you know?
Cool. Some call it a studio.
Well, then you just have guys down there be like, check this fucking one out. Yeah. You ever see Finger Tap
so
before?
Sweet.
Fucking check this one out. Dan, check this fucking shit out.
If I had a guitar store in the basement, I would never go in there.
No. Guitar store? I hate guitar stores.
Worst.
So this concept, the human aquarium in which he would make it's like basically like get girls to like put on like a mermaid outfit and swim yeah. around topless for his own entertainment. Again, being menaced by sharks on the other side of some glass.
This was a thing in the like late 90s, early 2000s. The standard LA, like the standard Hollywood, when they opened, that was like a big thing they had. And it's showcased in an excellent 2-episode arc in Sex and the City season 4.
You told me about that, actually. And I ended up looking
season
it up.
Three,
and yeah, there were just like women in a hotel in downtown LA that would just like read a book.
Yeah. They would just like
lay there.
They
weren't allowed to nap. And they just lied in a box behind like the person checking you in and you looked at them.
Completely unrelated. The standard Hollywood, bankrupt. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Really?
Closed. Didn't survive the COVID.
He basically built this thing to look like a pre-Columbian temple. It looks like a fuck it. Like, you never go to Universal Studios or whatever. Like, if you look at pictures of this thing, it looks like you're waiting in a queue to go on or like a themed roller coaster.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I gotta say, I like the way it looks.
It looks like you're waiting in line for Indiana Jones at Disneyland.
Yeah,
if you've been there.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it looks like. Like where it's got like fake rainforest and like sound. I imagine there's just like sounds of like parrots like piped
yeah,
in
yeah.
everywhere. Whatever. Like fake rocks.
Kind of reminds me of like the height of tiki culture in
yes.
in America. Like just these huge multi-level restaurants with like Flaming Idol or
Rainforest Cafe.
I actually really dig that. Yeah, yeah.
Rainforest Cafe is cool.
Actually, it's his plans for his original house was actually a swing revival themed house where it was going to be like a zoot suit sort of thing in the basement. He'd have
Like speakeasy
monkey
style.
Bone playing on all the TVs. Yeah, the Cherry Pop and Daddies are actually banned from the Bahamas. Like all swing music is banned from most of the Caribbean due to the second Zoot Suit riots in the mid 90s.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, the Zoot Suit rioters were actually only considered rioters by one side. They had letters of mark from the other. They weren't actually rioters.
Yes, yeah.
They were
Zoot
Suit privateers. So what he basically said, it was inspired by Mayan civilization because he mistakenly believed, he claims rather that he mistakenly believes that like the Mayan civilization was indigenous to the Bahamas, which is not
wrong.
What?
Right?
What?
Yeah. He was like, yeah,
there's no way he thought like at what point during construction do you think someone told him
like
how
Peter.
Far in where they were like, you know.
I can't even try to imitate his accent, but he's like, so they did child sacrifices around here too, right? Like,
yeah, totally. Why? No one would think that the Mayans were in the...
Well, they did sort of... it was that, like... It was because it was the Taino people who were in the Bahamas, but he, like, believed that there was this cultural affinity between the Mayan civilization and the Bahamas, and he just, like, ran with that idea. Or at least so it is claimed in one, like, the old local...
Just say you like volcanoes, dude.
Yeah, that's weird.
So as a boss as well, because I think it's important to sort of also just include this stuff, he frequently shortchanged his employees. He was accused of using sweatshop labor in Jordan. He underpaid some of his factory workers. Like he was sued for underpaying his factory workers in the order of millions of dollars. But as a boss at the estate as well, because again, like labor laws are quite lax, He was allowed to fine employees every time they screwed up. So basically, he would charge you $25 if you leave a glass on a beach cabana, or if his room isn't cool enough to his liking when he arrives, or if there's a housefly in the grand hall. Whoever's on deck is charged $25 out of their paycheck.
Can I actually get the terms of that? Because like sometimes, you know, you do a podcast and someone's like, oh, I don't feel good. Or like, you know, you're being mean to me or like whatever. And like, I feel like you should be able to find people that you work with. They don't have to pay it, but like, you know, maybe rack up a debt.
Stupid.
Not you, Liz. I'm talking about another
different podcast
thing. Different podcast.
Brace, please don't find me.
I own a lot of podcasts.
So basically I think one of the things here, right, is tyranny seems to be central to this guy's sort of whole reason for living. He lives to what he's written about in his terms of coming into a market to sell clothes. He enjoys and conquers it. He wants to dominate. He even says, you don't know how far you can go until you push the limits, as his inspirational quote for inventing NAFTA.
yeah, NAFTA really pushed the limits.
Yeah.
And
he is essentially just, I think this is someone who enjoys the degradation of others as much as he can possibly get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
100%. A lot of those occurred at this house in what were called pamper parties. This is Nygaard on his own parties. He said, we've been running these parties for about 15 years. We start with sports activities in the afternoon, play beach volleyball, and have dinner and a bit of karaoke and dancing and massaging. He couldn't stop himself from saying that last one. And massaging.
Massaging.
Yeah.
I mean, he also had like a... From what I understand, he had like a check-in system at the gate too, where like his sort of lackeys at the front gate would not only take down all the women's personal information, but would do full headshots and body shots of them, which would be sent to a computer where Mr. Nygaard could access upstairs at his own house and like select.
That's right. And he maintained that database for 40 years.
Jessica Alba was at one of these parties.
Was indeed.
She talked. That's right. Yeah, she talked about it. She said it was real creepy.
Yeah,
as creepy as you would think.
He tried to get Courtney Stodden to go to one of them and was texting her multiple times an hour.
Fuck, I forgot about her.
Yeah, he texted her.
What happened to her?
Who she is?
Oh, Brace, Google that name right now.
Oh, hello, nurse. Give me a break. Who's she?
Oh, my God.
Who's Doug Hutchinson?
That's her crazy old husband, right?
Yeah.
Well, no prenup with Doug Hutchinson. She was the breadwinner. Hello. Well, have you heard of podcasts?
She used to have a great social media. I don't know if she still does.
Yeah.
Like Twitter. Very DMs. Odd.
Indeed. Well, so she... He tried to get her to come and model at the K, which is mostly how he would do this. He would go up to women or get his girlfriends to approach them because they were in this thing where if they would get him other women, then he would leave them alone. And so he had them in this like
Epstein
insane
style.
this relationship of domination. Or he would try to get them to say, oh, you can come to a modeling shoot here. Or what have you, and then that would be, the doors would close, obviously.
This is very Epstein style, because he would do the same sort of thing with recruiters and with modeling stuff, because, you know, he had the relationship with Victoria's Secret.
Yeah, and in fact, Nygaard also had a woman, Sulin Medeiros, who was like his main sort of female accomplice. He also...
Basically his Ghislaine.
He also had a... He also worked with a talent agency called Warren and Baram Management. Jonathan Baram, who I think I sent a picture of in the group DM.
Yes.
Riley, what did he refer? Yeah, what did he refer to himself again?
The Hebrew pimp.
I can't remember.
Why you got to repeat yourself?
Yeah,
that's right.
We invented pimping. You know what I will say about this story, except for our Hebrew pimp friend. Edifying as a Jew to find that we're not very involved in this. It was nice. I'll say it was good for me.
But so the parties essentially were kind of like it was this big party. He would often get local Bahamian girls or girls from Canada, the U.S. say, we're going to do a modeling shoot, or you could become famous or whatever. All these promises. They would come in and then they would be effectively trapped here. And it was widely known that this was happening, but the police never came and there was never a fruitful investigation. The FBI looked at Nygaard in 2015 and 17 over allegations of sex trafficking, and DHS investigated him for a few months in 2016, but none of the investigations went anywhere. And police officers, it was uncovered by the CBC, were also receiving regular cash payments at Nygaard K. So in the CBC report, I quote, the police officers used to come on a daily basis for envelopes, but Mondays would be the biggest day because that's the payout day for the week, said Natasha Codner, who began working in an administrative role at Nygaard K in 03. And it was essentially, it was what brought Nygaard down eventually was that he fell on the wrong side of different kinds of powerful people, whether that is his neighbors who are also rich, like white American, like Americans or Canadians, or like the political vagaries of the Bahamas, where the party he was allied to fell out of power in 2017, partly due to association with him.
Allied to as in owned. Was owned yes. completely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, basically got taken down by what I interpret as just a classic baby boomer property dispute.
Indeed.
Yeah. 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 Although this one seemed to have gone into rather deeper territory than most. I mean, Bacon was aggressive.
And
yeah. And Nygaard was aggressive right back.
Oh yeah.
And in fact, we will be discussing the decline and fall of Nygaard, starting with the property dispute, ending with sort of the collapse of the Progressive Liberal Party in the Bahamas in the bonus episode, part two.
That's a pro's pro. You know how to do that. We can never do that on the show.
Yeah,
we can never figure it out. We just end up doing one crazy long one, and then we have to do another episode.
Yeah.
Well, Riley
that's a good idea, Liz. We should be like, you know what? Part two coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we
and several I was like, let's, you know, why don't we just give it another 3 hours?
Riley and I have been doing this for what, like 2 months now, and I still can't do the like taking us out of the episode thing. Every time I do it, it's just like, oh, the episode's finished. Okay, go to Patreon. All right, bye.
Here, check this out. Thank you for listening to The Bottleman. It's been Dan and Riley. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, we've got a second episode every week, $5 a month on Patreon. You can subscribe to it. This week, it is the second part of our episode about Peter Nygaard, who some are calling the Canadian Epstein, but we don't quite agree. So we will see you there. And if we don't see you there, we'll see you next week.
Come on,
Jesus,
man.
Dude.
My Jesus. How many podcasts do you do, Riley?